Welcome to Dream Big with Jill Jack, a show that will inspire, educate, and encourage you to break down your barriers and follow your heart. Here's your host, Jill Jack, on Empower Radio.
And are you breaking down your barriers today, everybody? That's a tough one, isn't it? But you know what? If you're following what you love to do, sometimes the barriers don't seem as bad. Sometimes they feel like a brick wall. But you know what? If you have the passion and the love and the desire to create the dreams that you want to be able to come true, then that's your energy. That's where you get it from. And also be kind to yourself when you're tired. Take a day off if you want to every now and then, you know. Listen to your body. Listen to your brain. Today, I am so excited to have a wonderful guest with me. And the reason I kind of started in with that is because he has had some pretty incredible barriers. And he also fights the good fight to create a beautiful music scene for so many people. And I was always curious why there are people like that out there. I'm a musician, so I know why I do what I do. You know, I get, as far as I'm concerned, I get the accolades. I get to show up, people clap, they tell me they love my music, but the people behind the scenes, the ones that actually set up those venues or create those festivals and do all of the hard work behind the scenes, what makes them tick? Well, my guest today is Mr. Craig Carrick, and he and I had a very interesting introduction. I get emails a lot from people, and sometimes they're great, sometimes they're awesome, and then sometimes I'm a little like, ooh, what does this mean? Well, I just had a stalker situation, and I was really paranoid about people. This guy found out where I lived. He was telling everyone he was going to marry me. Now, if he looked like Brad Pitt and he was like 30 years old, that'd be great. But he was 76. And, you know, what could I say? No, sorry. But in all seriousness, it was kind of scary. And so I got this, I think it was an email from Craig. And it said, will you come to my house and jam in my basement? My wife and I have a lot of equipment, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, great, another stalker. So I wasn't in tune with house concerts at the time. I had no idea. Well, then I found out this is exactly what he did. It wasn't just a basement. It was like a stage. He had people come and watch and support our music. I was so embarrassed. So that was our introduction. And luckily for me, he is a very kind and forgiving soul. Mr. Craig Carrick, how are you today?
I'm good, my friend. How are you doing?
How many years ago? I know. How many years ago was that, do you think? I don't even know.
Like 15 years
ago. Oh, my God. And he's still forgiving me. I appreciate it. So, you know, I want to talk about a lot of things with you. What, you are a musician as well. I mean, you started playing, how old were you when you started playing music?
I don't know. I was probably, you know, like a 14 or something like that, young teenage boy, you know.
When was
like
your
that.
First band?
First band was when I was probably 15.
Wow, cool.
Yeah, and we had a little band. It was we were like really into the hard rock thing at the time, like Deep Purple and Led Zeppelin and stuff like that.
Awesome.
Steppenwolf and the Stones. We were into all that stuff, Beatles. So.
And you played guitar, right, in that?
I started out playing keys, and I
really?
Was a really horrible key. Yeah, I did. My claim to fame was I was like the only dude in Northern Michigan that had a Moog synthesizer, you know, so it made all kinds of bizarre sounds, but that was about the extent of it. I was never really good at it, but
my producer here, Remy, just gave you a thumbs up. He liked that. So there you go. And so what, through the years, I mean, did you play music like your whole life? Pretty much? Were you always in bands? Or, you know, it's funny. We know each other 15 years, and I don't know this.
I've always just been sort of a hottie guy, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, I did a little bit of light gigging. I played in a wedding band for a while. Mm-hmm. And you know, even when I was in a service, we had a little band called the Prairie Pickers.
Really?
It was like the real genuine, real genuine Americana thing, too, you know? Kind of hillbilly meets hippie, you know? So
that would be a great bio. We might have to steal that. So how old were you when you went in the service, and what kind of service was it?
Yeah, I was in the Army. I had just I actually turned 19 in boot camp.
Wow.
Which in boot camp, you don't really get to celebrate your birthday. You know,
no.
You get to do extra push-ups or something that day.
Throw up for different reasons,
yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Exactly.
Oh, my God.
Exactly. Well, that was a long time.
What made you go into service?
You know, it was the early 80s. It was 1980. Mm-hmm. 1981 is when I actually got in. But there was, and I lived in northern Michigan, and there weren't a lot of jobs around. And, you know, I had to find something to do. And college just wasn't really in the cards for me, so I went in the service. I wanted an adventure, too, and my mom's from Europe, from Germany, and I wanted to go there. And it was a guaranteed ticket to go to Germany. So it was kind of cool. So I got to go see some of the world and all that kind of stuff.
You know, I did almost sign up for something. I think it was Army, Navy, something. I was kind of in that, like, fork in the road, what do I want to do? And I did go in, and man, if you go into their offices, they call you forever until you say yes or no.
Yeah,
I was like,
true.
I don't want to go. I don't know what I was thinking. But, you know, I did. I feel like that there is kind of a guaranteed adventure, and also not just where you're going, but about yourself and what you're made of, right? Because boot camp, man, that's like a psychological and physical thing, right?
It is. I mean, I'm really glad I did it, but I wouldn't want to do it again. You know, I really wouldn't want to go through it all over again. My hat's off to anybody that joins up. And, you know, I mean, ultimately, you're there to serve your country, and you're trying to do kind of, you know, do something with your life that's a little bit bigger than you are. And it's a great opportunity. But it's also a lot of work, and it kind of sucks, too. You know, you're away from your family, and you got to work these horrendous hours. Sometimes you work like a 30-hour shift in one day, you know.
Whoa.
Yeah, so.
So it kind of, that's interesting, because if you tie it in a little bit with what you do with festivals. So, I mean, think about that. You know, you're doing something, so, you know, so I can let the listeners know, I don't know what you guys consider your role, but I consider you one of the main developers of Nor'easter Festival.
I don't really have an official title, I don't think.
Yeah, you do it all. That's why.
Well, everybody does, so it's not just me, for
right,
sure. There's
right.
a lot of people doing a lot of stuff. But, you know, I think I get a lot of the, because I MC the event, and I'm also I work with the artists and stuff. So I think a lot of people see me as like the main guy, but you know, there's a lot of us that do a lot of stuff.
Oh, absolutely. Hands down. The people behind the scenes are incredible. The, you know, everybody by the stage, the food, you name it, merchandise.
Yeah.
But let me ask you, when you could just be going and seeing festivals, what drove you to be a part of this festival?
It's to me, it's about, there's two communities that collide in that environment. Same thing with house concert or any show you do at any venue. And that's the artist community and the patrons, the people that enjoy music or art or whatever. I love seeing that marriage happen. And sometimes you've got musicians that don't know that they can play a listening room. And then you've got patrons that don't know that listening room bands exist and that you should shish and listen to the music. And when you see that the two of them coming together, and you see, I mean, how many listening rooms have you played, Jill? You know, where you make that instant connection with the audience, and you can tell you're winning people over that have never done that before.
Right.
You know, my part of bringing everybody together, that's rewarding to see, you know, all of a sudden everybody just clams up and they're like, oh my gosh, I'm so involved. I'm so, you know, taken by this music and by this performance or the story behind this song or whatever. It's really fulfilling, you know. So as a non-artist, that part of it, I know that there's some impact there. So it's for that community that sort of needs each other. So
well, I thoroughly have always loved house concerts, and I mean, thanks to you introduced me to them pretty much, I think, 15 years ago. But
that was not a star.
You are not a stalker. You've proved that. And I really appreciate that. Now I stalk you. So, I mean, originally you opened your home and with Nick, your wife. I mean, how did you guys just decide, okay, let's just have 40, 50 people, strangers and others, friends, whatever, come to our, you know, you put 50 chairs in your basement and people came. How did you guys decide to do it? And was there ever a time where like Nick was like, I'm done, or you're done, or, you know what I mean? Because it is a commitment.
I do. It is. Stacy Earle. Do you remember Stacy Earle?
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Earle's little sister was playing locally. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm a huge fan. And I'm like, where is this? It turned out it was at a house concert. And so we went, and I was like, Nick, we could do this. I mean, we could do this. And she, and so
what was her response?
She thought I was a little nuts at first, you know. but she's seen it because she was there with me, and she's like, "All right, you know, if you want to try it."
Mm-hmm.
And so we did our very first house concert. I don't remember what year it was, but our very first one was Annie Capps and the Milroys, and oh man,
oh my gosh.
So cool.
That's killer.
Yeah, it was
That's
really
great.
Fun. And so everybody loved it. And so we just kept doing it from then. And it's been, we've met the most incredible people, lifelong friends, people like Herbie Hughes, Herbie.
Herbie's great. He supported this radio station. I love Herbie. He's a total support of musicians. That's what I mean. There's like angels all over the place in regard to supporting music. And
That's
the community. Yeah. Well, and just so that the listeners know what a house concert is, because so many people still do not know what it is, and they get kind of like, whoa, that sounds weird. But it isn't. It is a communal thing. It's so beautiful. And so somebody opens their house and invites friends and takes reservations. Some are only like 15 people. Some are 100. It just all depends on the house. And the musician comes and usually does like two sets, two 45-minute sets with a break, and we get to know the fans. And I always love telling the story when I opened for Bob Seger at the Palace, which was 20,000 people. And the next day I drove to Indiana and did a house concert for 25 people. And
yeah, right. Cool.
The feelings that you get from both are so different. Obviously, you can't really bond with 20,000 people. You know, it's a more of an energy thing, but when you're sitting in front of 25 people and they want to know who you are, that's a great feeling. I mean, for an artist, and the people that hosted it were incredible. One, we appreciate all that you do. So let's get to the festival. We have a festival coming up this weekend, June 7th, 8th. 9th, right? Are those the dates, right?
Yeah.
And it's in Mayo. How did you choose Mayo? And, you know, did you just run into a...
We have a little cabin up in that general area, mm-hmm. and we've been going up there for like 20 years. And I always told Nick, I said, someday when I'm older, I'm going to find a small music festival in a small town where I can, do something. I don't know what. I'll do something there, and just to be helpful and be part of that community. And lo and behold, here's a poster for this is like probably in February, March. And there's a poster in a hardware store that says Northeastern Music Festival. And it was the first annual festival. So I figured out how to get in touch with the organizer and said, hey, I want to help. I want to get involved. What do I got to do? And they said, just anything you can come up with. Right now we're kind of, we kind of got things pretty well in place, but we need people that can be there and help. And if you've got something you want to try, we're willing to try it. And that's when, we started that Guitars for Kids program.
And tell us a little bit about that. What is that?
Basically that's how it, the Northeastern people, Buffy Carr and, a couple of her friends had put this music festival together with the help of like the Blue Water Ramblers and mm-hmm. some other folks. And they needed something for kids. And I grew up in a really small town in Northwest Michigan, a lot like Mayo area, really, pretty desolate, lots of farmland and forests and so forth. And there was nothing. If you had any interest in arts or music, there was really nothing.
Wow.
You were sort of on your own. There was nothing at our schools. There was, and even people that were really into that kind of stuff, we didn't find us way before the internet and stuff. So, and having, you know, resources to start playing music and getting equipment and that, you couldn't go rent something. We were, you know, 25 minutes to the closest town.
Oh my God.
So I decided that first year I bought 4 guitars and I said, we're just going to hand them out to kids at the festival and see what happens. And it was cool. You know, the kids, we had them fill out like a little application. Tell us why you think you should play guitar or something along those lines. And they gave us a little essay, a little information. And it really, the whole thing was about finding a kid that we think would benefit from it. It didn't mean, you know, we were rewarding a kid that was the all A student, and it wasn't, you know, really based on economics either. It was really just, you know, really looking for the kid that needed something. Maybe they weren't a great athlete. Maybe they weren't, you know, social at school and you know, that just maybe they were a little bit, not picked on the baseball team or the last guy picked on the baseball team,
right,
or whatever. And so, but it wasn't just that. There were some kids that were like, you know, the star of the baseball team, but they just needed an instrument, you know?
Sure. And I mean, how beautiful is that you guys did that? That is great. Yeah. But I mean, what made you think about that? Just because you thought about your childhood and you were like, you know what, I could have used somebody like that. Is that really?
I was a kid, you know. I was never good in sports. I was never a real good athlete. I mean, you know, growing up in a small town, you do try, and you know, but if you don't do well in athletics in a small town, a lot of times you're sort of, I don't want to say outcast, but you just
you're out of the loop per se. Yeah,
you're a little out of the loop, you know, and everybody else is doing well at this, but I didn't. And I never felt like an outcast. I mean, I went to school with nice people and everything, but we grew up, we didn't have a lot. We lived on a small farm. We didn't have a lot of money, and to go get an instrument was kind of a
sure
tough thing to do. You know?
Right. And did you find that music was a good, I don't want to say escape, because I don't mean the outlet. Was music a good outlet for you?
Yeah, it was. You know, I don't know if the word outlet or escape, I think more of a path, you know.
There you go. Yeah.
Led to meeting other people and, you know, and putting yourself in a situation where, you know, like if you wanted a gig, you had to kind of overcome some fears. And, you know, I was never a really good singer, but I would try to sing a little harmony or whatever. And yeah, I mean, it always kind of helped me with a direction, and it led me to really, you know, long-lasting friendships that I still have today, you know. And I'm sure it's the same for you. I mean,
oh, absolutely.
When you first opened up your guitar case, that led you to all kinds of places.
It sure did. I mean,
you got your own radio show. So how cool is that?
Yeah, you just never know, right? And so, you know, while you were creating this with them, and then, you know, you have the infamous VW bus that someday I'm going to steal from your garage. But I mean, just there's so many things about you that became quite, and I'm not, like, you know, forgetting the other people that also do the Nor'easter Fest, but there is part of your personality that just is part of that festival. And I think the energy, you know, I think the energy from your passion for music is what really keeps this festival successful, you know, on top of the hard work that you all put in.
I'm a geek. There's no question about it. I'm a little, I'm a real avid listener. I go to a lot of shows. I've always been obsessed with records, and you know, I read Cream magazine back in the day. I had a really, my grandson is.
That's all right. He's allowed. He's adorable. How does he feel? You've got another grandson that just came in recently into the world.
Yeah, he's he's adjusting, but he's doing good.
That's good.
They're both great, you know, but our first guy, Finnegan, he's adjusting a little bit, but he's such a great kid that he'll do just fine.
He's beautiful too. So,
yeah.
So, and when, you know, and then throughout all this, you know, you've had, I think, an extremely interesting life. I just love your passion and I love seeing you get involved and I love being involved projects. You have assisted me. You have helped me create some of my dream shows, you know, a CD release show, or, you know, we just come up. I love that I can bounce ideas off you, but you don't just do that with me. You do that with a lot of artists. You're very giving that way. Is this something that just kind of keeps you alive and you're just like, God, this feels good. And that's why I do it. I mean, you don't ever feel like when I work with you, I don't feel like there's an agenda. So you never seem to have an agenda. So you just do it out of passion.
I don't think I have an agenda. I guess I really don't. I'm pretty careful to not be self-serving in, you know, in a sense that, you know, I want to financially gain from this, or I'm trying to, you know, I don't have an angle where I'm like, well, if I get Jill Jack to do this, I'll make an extra $10 or something, you know.
$7.50.
Like that, you know? Yeah. Yeah, well, after your cut, right? But no, but I don't really see it that way. I mean, I know that there's economics to all of these endeavors and all of the, you know, all of the different things that the artists do. I know that there's a financial obligation to make sure that people get taken care of, but I don't feel like I really need to be part of that part of it. In fact, I'm more comfortable not taking any kind of money. It just feels more natural to me.
Well, that dedication and that passion shows, and I hope you don't mind us talking about it, but you did have a very large battle with cancer. And I remember when we did the benefit for you and so many people came out, and I think that just showed how much and how many people you've touched in your lifetime. How did that feel? What were the emotions you were feeling when you were witnessing all of that?
Well, I was amazed. I mean, our good friend, the late Kim Alborn, who just passed away this past fall, was sort of the spearhead behind that. And I was a little embarrassed by it at first, you know, but at the same time, I really did kind of need the help, you know, so the fundraiser really did help us. Mm-hmm. But what was just amazing was, you know, who was all there, and people came and contributed in so many ways. And there was this incredible music. I mean, incredible. I'll never forget it. It was absolutely, I'll just never forget it. And I had been sick for a while too. I've been kind of, I don't know if the word quarantined is the, I had a bone marrow transplant. So I was like isolated from.
You couldn't be around anyone. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so it was kind of weird, you know, so then I went from, and I'm a pretty social person.
Right.
And so to be stuck in the hospital for a month and, you know, not being able to see very many people, especially my family. And then, you know, then a couple months at home, the same thing. And then you guys did that big.
And then we threw you into everyone. But, you know,
awesome.
That concert was, I think for all of us was an incredible experience from a musician standpoint. And then just everybody that was there, it was such a celebration of your life and you got to be there. That's the beautiful thing. Yeah, I love celebration of life. You know, when we talk about after people pass away, but the fact that you were there, you got to feel the love, you got to see the love. And do you feel that helped in your recovery?
It did. It did. I mean, just knowing that somebody cares, you know, I'm not all that confident that, you know, there's sometimes I'm like, I don't know, you know, am I doing all right? Dang, you do the best you can, you know, but man, that day, that whole event, I just felt it. I just completely felt it. And it was remarkable. It really was.
And how is your health now? How do you feel now?
I'm in remission. I've been in remission for a few years, several years now, like 5 years now. And, you know, it's always there. There's no cure for what I have. And so I'm always worried. It's something that's always in the back of my mind. What happens if it comes back, or what's that lump, or what's this funny feeling I have, right. You know, or whatever. I'm like, is that it? You know, and I've had a couple of things where I'm like, oh no, I think it's back or whatever. But no, I'm doing good. I'm getting older and I'm getting fat and
stop it. Oh, you're at a, I thought you were at a whole 30 or something. Whole 30.
I'm on a diet.
Yeah. Well, you're not on a diet. We're supposed to change that. We're supposed to say it's a way of living or something like that. I can't remember.
I've got a new way of living. But I have lost about 75 pounds.
Oh my God. Well, hello. All right. Well, we are winding down here, but I want to, if you could tell everyone where they can find the information about the festival and how they can get there and the tickets and all that. Go ahead.
Well, the best place is at our website, which is noreaster.org, noreaster.org. And follow the ticket trail there and click on that and buy some tickets. If you buy them now, they're still pretty cheap. Day pass is $35. I think weekend price is $65, but that's like three stages, you know, I don't know, 25 bands, which there's some of the Dream Big clients are actually going to be there this year.
Yeah, my Dream Big clients are going to be there, and I'm going to be all over the place with songwriting workshops.
Oh,
and
of course, Jill, you've got all kinds of stuff going on.
Yeah, you got me busy, baby. I'm going to need an assistant all weekend to show me where I got to go. But no, it's a beautiful festival. It is worth it.
It is.
And you're with nature, and you get a bunch of bands, and you will be able to meet Craig. And will the minivan be there? The VW bus, will it be there?
Yeah, that will certainly be there. Yep, my dad will be running the Guitars for Kids booth.
I love your dad. Okay, good. Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. All right. Well, we want to thank you. Thank you so much for being on Dream Big with me. And thanks for always continuing to go on this journey with me. Loved having you.
Absolutely. My pleasure, Jill. I'm looking forward to seeing you this coming weekend.
You
it's going to be a blast.
It's going to be awesome.
Thanks for everything you do.
Oh, thank you. And thanks to all the listeners.